It has been fooling researchers for years, as you've noted, that not only is there that patent, a number in the early 20th century, two researchers thought they had achieved fusion in palladium. And because they came to, were thinking along the same lines as Pons and Fleischmann were, and they thought they detected helium inside, an excess of helium inside palladium, which would be a nice sign of fusion because you're creating helium. It turns out that they were deceiving themselves because it turns out palladium soaks up helium just as well as it soaks up hydrogen, so you have enriched helium. So if they were seeing excess energy, and it's not entirely clear from the setup of the experiment that they were, I mean, they certainly thought they were. There was some sloppiness. But it's certainly possible that they were seeing it. It would most likely be a matter of chemistry, a chemical reaction where bonds are breaking, rather than a nuclear reaction where bonds in the center of a nucleus are being formed, the nuclear bonds that change atoms into other atoms are what are changed in a fusion reaction, as opposed to the attachments between atoms, which are chemical bonds, which are being changed in a chemical reaction like burning paper or cracking water. And so whatever they were seeing almost certainly was a chemical reaction. And chemical reactions are well studied, and there's only so much you can do for solving the world's energy problems with chemical reactions. In fact, burning gasoline is an extraordinarily efficient chemical reaction that allows us to power our cars. So it's not certain that there's anything there for solving the world's energy problems unless you have a nuclear reaction of some sort. It's pretty clear that that is not what they saw.
Now, to a physicist, it was absolutely staggering that you had these two respected chemists that didn't understand anything about the quantum theory. If you bring the protons together very closely, as you mentioned, then you could attain fusion. But you have to bring them really close, 10 to the minus 13 centimeters. However, in the Pons and Fleischmann experiment, these atoms are separated by 10 to the minus 8 centimeters, and you can simply, using a back of an envelope calculation, this is what we give our undergraduates can calculate that the fusion you get in a bottle is almost zero as a consequence. So for the physics community, what was absolutely staggering is the fact that chemists don't know any physics at all. Well, let's move on, because we had a story, another apparently fraudulent story that just took place a few months ago, this time at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, involving something called bubble fusion. So explain to us, what is bubble fusion, and how did the Nazis, of all people, first stumble onto this whole thing called sonoluminescence?
Yes, sonoluminescence is this really bizarre reaction, and it's only very recently been understood, where basically you take sound waves and you bombard a liquid with it, and you induce what's called cavitation. Under the right circumstances, if you hit water very hard, it actually behaves like a solid, and it can crack. And just for a tiny, tiny fraction of a second, you can cause a crack in water. And what happens when you have that crack is you create a little vacuum, and that vacuum causes water to evaporate, and it causes a bubble. By bombarding liquids with sound waves, you cause these bubbles, and if you time those sound waves just right, you can cause those bubbles to collapse very dramatically. And it was discovered that if you do this just right, you get such a dramatic collapse that you get some sort of reaction. No one quite knows exactly what it is, even today, that causes a little flash of blue light. So if you turn off the lights and you bombard a tub of water with sound, you can actually get tiny little lights. And it's poorly understood, but it's really cool. You've got a mechanism for compressing and heating something, and a gentleman out at Oak Ridge named Rusi Taliarkhan came up with a clever idea of how to get enormous bubbles by shooting neutrons into the liquid that would collapse dramatically. And his hope was that by having this dramatic collapse and heating and compression, you might actually induce fusion in the center of the bubble.
Well, I'm afraid that's it for the first part of Exploration. Once again, you've been listening to an interview with Professor Charles Seif of New York University. The book is called The Sun in a Bottle. And in the second half of Exploration, we're going to talk about your inner fish with a leading evolutionary biologist. Once again, this is Exploration. If you want a copy of today's program, call the Pacifica Program Service at 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230 for a copy of today's program. Also, be sure to check into my website. It's www.mkaku.org, mkaku.org. So stay tuned now for the second half of Exploration. Welcome. Once again, this is Dr. Michio Kaku, Professor of Theoretical Physics at the City College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, and this is the second half of Exploration. In the first half of Exploration, we brought on a professor of journalism at New York University, Professor Charles Seif, and he's the author of a book about fusion power, because energy, of course, is going to be a big issue in the coming years and decades. And in the second half now of Exploration, we're going to shift gears and talk about life on Earth. You know, it never ceases to amaze me that people have a hard time getting their head around the fact that, well, our ancestors were ape-like. Charles Darwin said that there was a common ape-like ancestor that gave birth to humans and apes. Well, in this half hour, forget about apes. We're talking about fish. That's right, we can actually trace many of the basic features of the human body all the way back to fish. And so, once again, in the second half of Exploration, we're going to bring on Professor Neil Shubin, talking about your inner fish, talking about Darwin's theory of evolution going back not just to the apes, but going all the way back to fish. And now I'd like to introduce our special guest for today. We're very glad to have with us Professor Neil Shubin. He's a provost at the Field Museum, as well as a professor of anatomy at the University of Chicago. And he has written a delightful book called Your Inner Fish, A Journey into the 3.5 Billionaire History of the Human Body. Well, this year marks the 100th anniversary of the issuing of The Origin of Species, which set off this incendiary debate concerning evolution and the origin of humanity. Some people have a hard time getting their head around the fact that we descended from a common ancestor of the ape and humans. And in this hour, we're going to forget about the apes. We're going to go back to the fish, back to the worms, back to the single-celled organisms that eventually gave rise to the human race. So once again, today we're going to talk about your inner fish, the fact that most of the organs of our body can be directly traced back hundreds of millions of years when our ancestors were fish. Professor Shubin, how did you as a youth first get interested in science and specifically evolutionary biology?
When I was about 8
to 12 years old. That was the time of Apollo, of the Apollo rockets and mankind's voyage to the moon. And I was just, I remember as a child just being glued to the television every time a rocket took off and every time a human being departed Earth to go to the moon. And that struck me as just such a powerful accomplishment, but it also really tickled me that, you know, people can do these things, that with the power of our brains we can ask powerful questions and do things that we normally wouldn't imagine are even possible. So I guess that sort of spirit of the space program of the late 60s and early 70s sort of carried with me, and even to this present day, I just, I have little children of my own now, and whenever I see, you know, one of the Apollo rockets in a museum display or a TV show talking about the space program, I actually get kind of emotional because my attachment to science is actually originally derived from seeing those successes of that program in the late 60s and early 70s.
Okay, then what made you switch toward biology and especially evolutionary biology?
Yeah, it was a big switch, and I guess I went from space to the past, you know, and I guess it happened when I was in high school, late high school and entering college. I get interested in the Earth history, dinosaurs, fish, the Argy Earth, the Argent, fascinating to me. And I think the thing about it that was most interesting was our past, that we could understand, or hundreds of millions, or in some cases billions of years ago. And that was really powerful. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have some great teachers. I was very fortunate to go to school in cities that had great museums. And all that just, you know, really had a major impact on me.
And also, you were involved with a major discovery concerning the evolution of the hand. Could you elaborate?
Yeah, I remember I got into that part when I was in graduate school in the 80s. And I saw one diagram in a book that showed the transformation of a fish to a land-living creature. And when I saw that diagram, I said to myself, golly gee, that is a first-class scientific problem. How did that happen? And that became my quest, really, you know, for my PhD dissertation and my research afterwards, to understand that. And it became clear that to understand that, I had to find new fossils. And I began the hunt in the late 80s around the world. And that hunt ultimately took us to the Canadian Arctic, where I've been working since the late 90s. And the reason why we went to the Canadian Arctic was because it has rocks of the right age and the right type to fill that gap between fish and land-living creature, between finned animal and limbed animal. And what we found over a series of years was a beautiful creature that has a fin which contains limb bones inside of it, which provides important clues on how fish evolved to walk on land.
And how old is that fossil?
375 million years old, we believe, plus or minus two.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this year marks the 100th anniversary of the creation of Darwin's theory of evolution. And some people have a hard time getting their heads around the fact that we share a common ancestor with the apes. But in this program, we're going to forget about the apes. We're going to talk about fish. In fact, even going beyond fish, we're going to talk about worms and some of the original predecessors of the human race. So let's begin with the basics. First of all, even kids know that we're made out of DNA, which has a blueprint for the makeup of our bodies. What is the percent of overlap between us and our nearest neighbor, the chimpanzee, and for that matter, between us and the fish?
Well, by depending on how you measure it, you can make the case that our DNA is about 99% similar to a chimpanzee.
And we'll leave this monkeying around stuff for another time. You are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM or freakradio.org on the internet. Next 2 hours, we're going to be doing the Bathrobes Piers Broadside Show twice a week. This is a short show, but that may be enough for you. Stay tuned. We're going to initially get into the bicycle blockade and banditry of the SCPD, and that we will be running through a number of other endless street interviews and your phone calls. So stay tuned, and I'll be right back. And it appears we have a defective machine here, which will soon be dealt with, so don't go away. We'll have our musical intro as soon as I can push the right buttons. And if the machine does the thing it should do, you're going to hear a little Jefferson Starship.
Hurry so. Hush me, boys, and listen. And his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon. For the pipes must be together by the rising of the moon.
By the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon. The pipes must be together by the rising of the moon.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more word for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon.
By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. We are pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon.
Out from many a mud wall cabin, eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly heart was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Murmurs passed along the valley like the banshee's lonely croon. And a thousand blades were flashing by the rising of the moon.
By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. And a thousand blades were flashing by the rising of the moon.
There beside the singing river, the dark mass of men were seen. Far above the shining weapon flew their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, forward strike the marching tune. And hurrah, me boys, for freedom, 'tis the rising of the moon.
'Tis the rising of the moon, 'tis the rising of the moon. And hurrah, me boys, for freedom, 'tis the rising of the moon.
And I believe that was a Jefferson Starship number from Jefferson's Tree of Liberty called The Rising of the Moon, surprisingly enough. Well, welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'll remind you again, if you want to call into this show, which is going to be largely about civil rights, where are they in Santa Cruz, and recent events such as the SCPD's bicycle banditry, which we saw, well, artfully concealed at the latest Santa Cruz City Council meeting. In the studio with me, however, I do have a guest who will be making comments occasionally. Who knows, she may break into song or screams, depending on her mood. Shall I introduce you? How would you like to introduce yourself? What is your name, madam?
Pat Colby.
Hey there, Pat.
Hey.
Welcome to Free Radio.
Thanks. It's cool in here.
Indeed. Pat, you are an activist who's been around Santa Cruz for how long now?
God, on and off, I think I've been here over 20 years.
Really? And how long have you been active as an activist?
Well, definitely been active solidly for the last 5 years since we got discriminated against. And our goal is to not only advocate for ourselves, but to make sure what's happened to us doesn't happen to anyone else. Because nobody should have to go through discrimination of civil rights.
Well, I know that you've been working on a couple of websites, initially on Steve Plaich's Citizens for a Better, More Votes for Steve Plaich, also known as Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz. He may be calling into the show, he's said perhaps today. I have my doubts, but Steve is a man who can't be predicted. He does what he does. He's a two-time city council candidate. He was a defender in Occupy Santa Cruz. And was responsible for taking a major role and still taking a role in a lot of hands-on work with homeless folks, whether it be buttering bagels with cream cheese on Mondays at the Red Church, or at least being available kind of as a legal resource, the person who's been through some legal training. for the Homeless Legal Persons Assistance Project. I'm going to stop giving his credentials because he hasn't been calling in lately, and I've got a lot of concerns about his political campaign and the kind of people he's appealing to. But he also is a man who knows a great deal about kind of what's going on because he has his fingers in numerous pies throughout the town, and perhaps he'll call in and we can get the taste of those pies, or we'll find out what's baking, so to speak.
Well, I tried to encourage him on Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz because he added me as an admin and another person because we were trying to make it a little bit more of a civil and safe place to post and debate and not argue, but, you know, hear diverse opinions on Santa Cruz. And, I found my brother, John Colby, Guerrilla Advocacy, has called to Steve. He's been really helpful. You're right. He does have his fingers in a lot of pies, and he's very resourceful. So he's like the go-to man. I have to respect him for that. He knows a lot of people, and he's willing to help.
Well, we'll see if he helps us out today, which he hasn't done for the last, I don't know, half dozen or so shows, but he has in the past been quite informative, and perhaps he will return to that role, although he has to face the razor tongue of Uncle Robert here if he does, and that may be a deterrent. It's possible. And on that same subject, actually, Steve posted something. Steve Pleich, rhymes with H, for those of you who look at his name and wonder how to pronounce it, P-L-E-I-S-C-H, on the issue of the bicycle distribution, which is now being funneled to a group called the Teen Center, about which I know very little. I guess it's a subdivision of Parks and Rec in the city, instead of the Bike Church, which had the program for 4 or 5 years before the police department unceremoniously and unapologetically and actually without any announcement or even saying they were doing it, cut off the bike distribution there. Which cut off distribution to 5 nonprofits. And I've discussed this on the air. City Council took up this issue at the Tuesday City Council meeting, finally, after 2 years of silence on the issue. And it was kind of sad to be at that council meeting because most people who were organized to come to it, and they were all supportive of the Bike Church, with the exception of the city staff, of course, who ruled the roost because they're the city staff, and what they put in front of the city council is what the city council votes, regardless of the public comment, generally, although not always, but usually that's the case, I've noticed, on the issues that I follow at the city council. But I want to give a plug to Bren Lair, who is the city clerk, and she and I are often on opposite sides of an argument, still on a number of issues. But she's also been quite helpful in providing me with information and responding to Public Records Act requests, as well as just simple statements of, you know, when are you going to put the video up of the city council meeting, which is now online. And she was very quick to respond, and the video, for the first time, is up within 2 days of the city council meeting. And I want to thank her and the other techies who did this. Of course, we now get to see in all its obscene glory the behavior of the city staff and the city council in essentially denying to many young people bikes. I mean, there will be some that will be distributed through the Teen Center, but not, as I understand it, to the degree and in the number that the Bike Church did for between 2000 and, I think it's 8 and 2012. And we're going to be hearing from Steve Schnarr, who's a Bike Church guy, worker, who's been trying to pry the bikes loose from first the police department, then the bike dojo, then the police department again, and the city manager. But they are determined to make apparently an object lesson of the Bike Church. That's the only interpretation I can really give to it. Any thoughts on that, Pat, or have you been following this
issue? I don't
know.
Did they forget to bring pizza to the party once when they promised
it's
or something?
Possible, you know,
yeah.
Maybe they don't.
I know that my brother did a FOIA request for the emails between Hillary, is it Bryant or Brant?
Bryant.
And
still on the council.
Right, and I guess it's a big, dark Homeland Security secret because they refused to give him the emails that should have been under transparent and open government.
I had the same problem, and so did Steve Schnarr, who we'll be hearing from later. But we can hear the apologia or rationale of Scott Collins, who is the guy who gave the presentation at City Council that described the three proposals that the staff came up with, not to rectify its error and return the bikes to the bike church, which would be the obvious approach, or at the very least to explain in some specific detail why they were not returning to that, or at least to provide an open bidding process so that the bike church, which brought all kinds of supporters to this council meeting and no critics, would be able to restore the program in a competitive process where they wouldn't be the only ones, but instead the city staff set up for the three proposals that they had were to establish an open bidding process, to continue to auction off the bikes online, which is what's being done now, or to give some of the bikes to the teen center and the rest auction off online. And the whole staff report was skewed to essentially support the third position, auction and teen center. In other words, they weren't going to allow for an open process, even an open process where if anybody else wanted to take a bunch of damaged bikes and try to deal with them, they could. That didn't work too well with the bike dojo. Hillary Bryant's spouse's working associate or work friend, which is what happened in 2012 when the police department had to find somewhere to reroute the bikes, so they rerouted them to this for-profit group called the Bike Dojo, run by Rob Miles and a partner. And Miles couldn't get rid of the bikes, so he stashed them in a warehouse and had to get rid of them because the owner of the warehouse didn't want them piling up. And when they were to be gotten rid of, he sent them to the bike shack in Watsonville, as I understand it. But the bike shack in Watsonville funneled them back to the bike church. And when Miles heard about this, which unfortunately Schnarr and Posner blew it by mentioning it to Schnarr mentioned it to Posner, and Posner immediately mentioned it to the bike dojo. Then Miles rushed down there and stopped them from returning the bikes via the bike shack to the bike church. This was all in the summer of, I think it was in the summer of 2012. It might have been later than that. In any case, the three proposals proposed by the city staff were weighted to get the city council to vote for the last one. And you're going to hear Colin's presentation of this, which is a little tedious, and I may cut it off, but you will hear some of it. It's actually the only time you get to hear any explanation whatsoever from the city staff as to why the police department stopped providing bikes to the bike church in the early spring of 2012 without telling them, without warning them, without expressing any concerns that might have been dealt with and so not required this kind of action. You'll get to hear their story. We're going to play that now. It's online for those who want to have to hear it and see it at the City Council website. Or at least I'm hoping we're going to be able to play it. I'm clicking on it. Doesn't seem to be doing anything.
Seems to be flatlining.
Yeah, we're flatlining every so often. But I think what I'll have to do is sort of try to boot it up again.
I know a lot of people, that teenagers that benefited from the bike church, and they thought it was great to be able to go in there and work on their bikes, and, you know, it taught them kind of survival skills, and it was a great place for them.
Right. And I,
good afternoon,
you know,
everyone.
I think we're hearing something. Let me see if we can actually get this properly queued up.
And I would like to ask the clerk to please call the roll.
I'll try to do.
Councilmember Bryant. Yes, Chair Azib.
That's the main vehicle.
Did to become part of the town's.
Bear with me, listeners. Almost there.
Probably, I'm sure it will be worth the wait from what I've heard.
Well, I don't know about that, but we're going to get to it, come hell or high water.
The only use over the last 20
So we've got here initially.
So following the dissolution.
Is we actually are. We're waiting for the previous item to finish up, which it will shortly.
plain sight.
So shortly you're going to hear the thrilling exposition of this item, which essentially was a pre-done deal. I should say a done deal, and it was sort of pre-arranged, or so it appeared to me. I've got no evidence of this other than the way the staff report was written, the way the city council people spoke, essentially ignoring all the questions that the members of the audience, of whom there were about 20, and they were cut back to 2 minutes each to speak on the issue, and they weren't allowed, they weren't given a time certain, though, at which to speak on the issue, which sometimes happens. The mayor says, okay, this issue is going to come up at 3 o'clock regardless. Instead, people had to wait until other items were resolved. And it is true that the mayor did allow one of the speakers who had requested time in advance, and this is, by the way, something people should know about. If you represent an organization and you want to speak on something in advance... Having trouble again here. You have to let the mayor know in advance you represent an organization, and then, you know, she will presumably allow you the opportunity of speaking. I think we're ready to go.
Ready to come to the podium? And seeing none, let me bring this back to the council for deliberation and a motion.
I'll move that recommendation. I'll second.
Okay, we've got a motion to approve and a second. Bryant with the motion and Matthews with the second. Any other discussion?
This is the prior item.
Yes.
Had to do with Sky Park.
Just because it's going so fast in case people in the public.
And that's Councilmember Posner, who we don't have to listen too much to. He's praising the city for acquiring, or actually selling the Sky Park to the city of Scotts Valley.
Exactly.
I got no position on that issue.
Very much.
With that, we have a motion and a second.
And
all
Mayor
those in favor,
Robinson.
Please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? And that carries unanimously. That takes us on to item 14, which is on our general business, which is the city bicycle surplus program. And today the presenter is Scott Collins. And he just needs a minute. We got going so fast there. Got ahead of you.
And Scott Collins is a guy who was the staff person for
the second to go
one of the staff people for the Task Force on Public Hysteria, or Task Force on Public Safety, as they call themselves. Nice guy, but part of a bad process and a nasty agenda.
All in favor, please say aye.
That's Don Lane cracking a joke over there. Cracking a joke as the bicycles, of course, get dumped in the teen center and in the essentially wrested from the hands of young people. And so as to cover the police department's behavior 2 years ago. At least that's my view.
As soon as you have a quorum, we're getting going.
And apparently they're waiting for a council member to
herd the cats.
Come back in the room. So they have a quorum. It looks like they have a quorum, but let me take a look at broadening this picture here. Yeah, there are a couple council members who are out in the back drinking coffee or something. City clerk returns, maybe smoking a joint, possibly. I doubt it. There are 3 council members missing, but there are now, there are actually 4 council members present, so they can proceed if they want, but they...
Council members, my name is Scott Collins, and I'm the assistant to the city manager, and here to talk about the city surplus bicycle program. As council is likely aware, the Santa Cruz Police Department retrieves on an annual basis anywhere between 400 to 500 bicycles that are either lost, stolen, or abandoned. And that number can fluctuate a little bit more or less than that average, but that's typically what we retrieve. And the Santa Cruz Police Department takes every effort it can to return these unclaimed bicycles to their proper owner. Unfortunately, most of the bicycles are unlicensed, and that's the main vehicle by which we can establish the link between owner and bicycle. And
I see you're making some motions. Before you say something, we have a caller as well. The police department has been trying to get the city council to require licensing of bikes for quite a while, and they've not been able to do it. This is another one of the police department's, you know, gimmies that's going to be added to this whole program. Let's take this caller first, and then your thoughts, Pat.
Okay.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Pat.
Is this number still in service?
Sorry?
Is this number still in service?
It certainly is.
Well, that's interesting. I haven't called in so long, I wasn't sure.
Well, by cracky, we're here, man.
And what are you talking about this evening?
Well, the bicycle maldistribution program that was passed by City Council.
Yep. Well, that's certainly a shame. You know, we've all decried that result, and everybody did what they could, but the decision was probably a foregone conclusion, as you so well know.
Indeed. And for those who don't know, and I first didn't recognize your voice, but as you continued to speak, you were the only man in the city whose name rhymes with H.
That's it.
Stevie Plache, as we sometimes fondly
call
you.
Yeah.
And I want to commend you for your boldness in calling into a critic who has savaged you repeatedly on the Internet. Pat is clapping here. She's in the studio, and she commends you for your good work.
Hello, Pat.
Hi, Steve.
So,
no, I just wanted to call in. You know, I really was kind of more incensed than normal about this latest bike church nonsense. And really, you and I have talked in the past about the ACLU or SCORE or any number of organizations around town trying to improve the quality of life for people who are disadvantaged or the working poor or the homeless. But I think really right now it's a kind of a come-to-Jesus moment for most progressives in town, and that we really have to get together and figure out a way to bring a progressive majority back to council. Because in my opinion, otherwise we're just simply parading around over there and addressing the symptoms and not the cause. The cause is the retrogressive city council, and the cure is the progressive majority being restored to council, and that's what we need to be thinking about right now.
So you haven't taken a lesson from the Ukrainian revolution yet, eh?
No, not yet, but you know, there are several, you know, excellent progressive candidates who I think could get some traction. Presumably they ran at the slate, kind of pool their time, energy, and money. Steve Smart comes to mind. I don't know whether Steve's going to be on with you this evening, but Steve would be an excellent candidate. Tim Goncharoff spoke up in his shock and near outrage at the decision that the council made on the bike search. I was very surprised at the kind of the passion of his response on my, on our Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz Facebook page today. And people are starting to kind of rally around, I think, more progressive causes, and it's needed. You know, we need to have a unified front if we're ever going to bring progressive majority back to council and roll back some of the retrogressive legislation that's been passed in the name of the people of Santa Cruz by the current council.
You know, Steve, if somebody wanted to, a legal eagle, or actually somebody without a lot of legal knowledge, could propose, demand a referendum in the next 30 days on this council decision. You know that, right?
Yeah, but you know what? That's just a lot of work to go through.
That's true.
For, you know, a marginally hopeful result. Really, people should be thinking about, you know, the candidates they're going to support, the people they want to put their time and energy behind, because I do think it's an opportunity. As you know, Lynn Robinson, our current mayor, is termed out. She will not be able to run. Hillary Bryant may or may not run. I think she's been chastened by her service as mayor. David Terrazas has not distinguished himself on council. I think that he is a relatively weak candidate. So it's an opportunity, really, to run a slate, get three people into city council and unite with MICA and start having, you know, the 4-3, 5-2 votes in our favor. If we had a progressive majority on council last night, the bike church would today be running that bike distribution system, and we wouldn't be bemoaning the fact that the only reason they weren't is because the city council doesn't like it.
Pat has some thoughts.
I have a question. Okay, I keep hearing the word progressive. Can you please define that for me? What
well,
is
I
a
think
progressive candidate?
There are people who are really wanting to improve the quality of life for the working poor, to improve the quality of life for the homeless, improve the quality of life for people with mental disabilities and physical disabilities. Those are the progressive people in my mind in town. The people who don't care a whit about those things are currently the people before making the laws that we're suffering under now.
I know that my brother was doing some fact-checking on the background of most of the city council members, and he found most of them had trust funds, and the majority of them were multiple property owners. And it kind of was disturbing because that doesn't really represent what Santa Cruz is about. Santa Cruz is about a middle-class struggle of a two-family income, about the poor, about the homeless. So I don't think our city council really knows where we're coming from, so they can't really represent us.
Well, and that's my very point, is that you really have to bring a majority of folks back on the council who are sensitive to those issues, or at least will look at them dispassionately in a way that's going to be fair and equally applied to everybody. That's the way it's always been in Santa Cruz in the last, well, I can't say always, I don't have a long history in Santa Cruz, but my observations have been in the last 10 years that the city of Santa Cruz is really just sort of the business community, the lodging industry, and those property owners who, you know, who really control the purse strings for most of the elections. And that's where the money comes, the successful candidates, and that was the energy comes from the successful candidates. That whole model has to change. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have the same kind of city council leadership that we have now, and that's just simply a lack of sensitivity to anybody but the money and the property of interest.
You know, I can see you're passionate about this supposed solution to the mat to the situation, as you have been for the last two elections. I mean, you've raised the issue repeatedly, and you've both, you know, made fun of yourself and also made it clear that is really your objective, is to get on the city council. And
well,
you know.
And ironically, Robert, that I might not be the best candidate to be part of a slate for progressives. You know, it may require people who haven't lost two successive elections as I have, people who aren't quite as clearly identified with some of the causes that are not so popular in town. We might need some people who are fresh faces and who can raise some money that I have found very difficult to do. And so I might not be the best person to be on that slate, but I would certainly support that slate because it really is the only way to be able to roll back many of the retrogressive ordinances that have been passed in the last couple of years. And I'm including the rental ordinances, I'm including the downtown artists and vendors ordinances, I'm including the no standing around on the median strip ordinances, I'll include the camping ban on that, although even with a progressive council, it's not likely that would be immediately repealed. But nevertheless, you know, you roll back some of the more obvious quality of life ordinances that we have in town. And otherwise, you know, we're just going to be going over to council with our hat in hand saying, oh, you know, please don't pass these ordinances because they're disproportionately going to be, you know, enforced against poor people or homeless people or disabled people. You know, that's not going to get us anywhere. It has to be a unified, you know, concerted effort to get a progressive majority on council again. And that's what people should start thinking about right now, today.
I totally agree.
This is the first time, Steve, I've actually heard you suggest that it's not pledged for city council in 2014.
Well, you know, I mean, if the progressives don't run a slate, and if they did, I would certainly support that in every way that I could, then I'll get out there because, you know, I like the process. Running for city council is really the only way that I can get people to speak to my issues, to actually get them to occasionally speak about disabled persons or poor people or homeless people, because otherwise those issues would never be brought up. You know, I've always said that, you know, nobody gets to serve on city council in Santa Cruz without speaking to my issues. And so I would, it's worth my time and energy to do that.
Well,
but
let me,
if we're talking about a realistic, pragmatic approach, you know, that slate may not include me.
Steve, let me ask you, because that's an interesting point you raise. And I Papa wants to say she agrees with you, it sounds like. But
oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm wondering, what lessons have you learned? What lessons have you learned? That's too pat a question. But, you know, you said that you were able to force people to address issues. What issues were you forced people to address, and who did what in 2010 and 2012 when you ran? Can you have a recollection of that?
Well, you know, the issues that I was able to raise, at least, were, you know, the social and economic agenda of the Occupy movement, you know, the camping ban, the treatment of homeless people in town, the fact that we really don't do anything to help our working poor in Santa Cruz, the fact that we don't create any kind of affordable housing, like for all the noise made about, well, let's all live local, work local, and keep local dollars in the local economy. You know, our city council has done nothing to generate anything near the kind of affordable housing we need. Those are the issues that just aren't talked about when you go, as you know,
they have multiple candidates for every year, and most of them are talking about, well, how would you improve downtown, or what do you think about economic development, or what do you think about public safety? Those nonsense issues that are important to the mainstream, but don't really speak
Steve,
to people
I have a question.
Who really need to have our help.
I have a question for you. Maybe you can answer this. I don't understand, as a renter, we realize that there's a lot of demand in Santa Cruz, but there's very little supply, so a lot of the rental is like way overpriced. And what I don't understand is the few apartment complexes that they've done, they've all made them luxury, which makes it so the average person can't afford them. Why aren't we building more apartment complexes just for average Joe citizen and Jane citizen? Why is it going to luxury? Because we need to help make things more competitive because there's a monopoly. We need to put more supply out there of apartments for people so the demand can be filled and there isn't this unjust kind of where the landlords have all the power in this city.
Yeah. Well, and the way to do that is to have a commitment by civic leadership. Robert can tell you, he's been around a lot longer than I. If you talk to Bruce Van Allen and people from that era when Bruce was mayor in 82 and 83, they did try to build some affordable housing in town. There were some coalitions of, you know, the various stakeholders who were trying to actually build some housing, apartment complexes, single-family units, residential complexes that could have been priced reasonably enough for working people to afford them. That just simply hasn't happened. It's not only the city council hasn't made a commitment to that, the county hasn't made a commitment to that either. And I brought that up
and
in the last election.
And I don't know why not.
And it's just simply, they're just not making any commitment toward
it. Or
that.
They don't care.
Well,
or
you know,
they want to keep the rents high.
Yeah, I would like to think that everybody who devotes themselves to public service is well-intentioned in one way or another. It doesn't always work out that way, but nevertheless, for me, you know, I have to go into it thinking that people I'm going to work with are going to be the people that are actually going to commit themselves to the kinds of goals and objectives that I would like to see, and those are, you know, in the main, helping people who need help. You know, the lodging industry in Santa Cruz has got plenty of help from the Conference and Visitors Council. The business community has got plenty of help from the Downtown Association. You know, Lord knows, you know, middle-class people in Santa Cruz have got plenty of help from their appointed city council. But, you know, people who are in reduced circumstances or poor or disabled or have mental health conditions or, you know, are homeless, they are the people that need our help, and Santa Cruz is leaving those folks behind every day.
But let me get back to the question, though, that I asked you. Who do you think you talked about you influenced the debate. You mean you raised a bunch of issues that you spoke about, and you did on both occasions, you know, oppose the camping ordinance. Did this have any impact on the race in terms of other people's willingness to respond, even your buddy Ron Pomerantz?
Well, you know, people have their positions staked out when they run for city council. Basically, they're trying to win. You look at even somebody like Micah, who's a very well-intentioned guy. You know, he staked out his positions, which were, relatively speaking, mainstream, and he didn't step on anybody's toes, I think, hoping that once he was on council, he'd be able to, you know, have some influence on the very issues that we're talking about. But, you know, if you take issues that aren't popular in Santa Cruz, the prospect of you raising enough money or getting enough support to actually win a city council seat are significantly diminished. So, you know, if you stand on principle, make, you know, courageous stands. Chris Crone told me that the last guy who was elected to any public office in Santa Cruz County, running simply as his own man, was Mark Premack.
And the principles he had weren't so hot, as far as I remember.
Well, there you go. But, you know, that's...
He also is a wealthy architect.
He's been around,
you know,
for a while, so...
I know how wealthy he is, but he's an architect. I imagine he's not a poor guy. He owns his own house, I imagine.
Yeah. He may be amongst the, you know, the privileged as well.
Well,
but,
you know,
that's the, you know, you can drive the debate as much as you want, but when the votes come down, I got 3,773 votes last time, so I probably got that base forever, but it's never going to be enough base to actually get a city council seat.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, this is, of course, a 180-degree turnabout from 2 weeks ago when we spoke. And I'm not saying that, you know, when you reassess, you shouldn't come up with a different opinion. But you're going to, you know, I'm not going to have Steve Place to kick around if you're not running for city council. This is very depressing for me.
Oh, well, you know, I'll be in there and go to the candidates forum and speak my mind. But if I think I'm siphoning off any votes from a progressive slate that I think is much more important than my own particular aspirations politically, then I certainly would step aside.
Well, you know, there are a number of issues that, of course, I probably should talk about the issues I differ with you on, because that can be maybe, you know, of help to people to understand differences in opinion in the community, and possibly they can make a choice as to what position, maybe even a third position, they might want to take. I have been harshly critical of you for not bringing up in a strong way obvious issues around homeless civil rights for the last 2 years when you've been a member of the ACLU board. And, you know, I've criticized you very specifically, and I've criticized you in actually not objecting when meetings were closed by bizarre behavior by your chair, Peter, what's his name?
Peter Gelblum.
Thank you. You know, and then, you know, essentially maintaining this sort of attempt to me, play footsie with the Rotkin types in order to, you know, eventually stack the board of directors with your own people. And you've got some people there that I would think are friends, but I don't see them doing much different than you're doing
on
the ACLU board.
We just got Mr. Obama on the board, just got Jay Kimball on the board, just got Dennis Sutton on the board at our last meeting.
Right.
So we also have Israel Molina from UCSC, Jacqueline Seidel, Ron Farmer, and so there are possibilities. But recall what I said when I started this conversation is that it really doesn't matter what positions the ACLU or SCORE takes on these various issues, because I think those are, you know, interesting and enlightening to people, and maybe they get behind it as kind of some kind of a progressive agenda. But it's not going to change the political balance in Santa Cruz. And unless you change the political balance in Santa Cruz, and that means at the city council level, you're never going to include a lot of people who are homeless, who are disabled, who are the working poor. It's just not going to happen. ACLU is not going to do that for you.
Yes,
SCORE
but
not it's, do it for
it's
you.
A good
you
first...
You've got to do it through the political process, and that's what I'm talking about.
It is a good first step to have the organizations...
Sure it is, of course. It's a great first step, and it addresses the symptoms, but not the cause. You know, if you're into symptomology and say, well, we're going to take a strong stand against, you know, median strips, we're going to take a strong stand against the camping ban, you could do that, but it's not going to change anybody's mind.
Well, you take a strong stand on the broader issue of criminalization of the poor, and that's the issue the Public Safety Committee or the Public Safety Task Force has essentially been doing.
And I will say that, interestingly enough, when we had our retreat this 2-3 weeks ago, one of the issues that is a priority for us this year is the Public Safety Task Force and strong reactions, strong responses to all the recommendations of the Public Safety Task Force. So you can look forward to seeing the ACLU taking strong stands on some of the recommendations of the Public Safety Task Force.
Well, that's nice, but again,
wise policy.
You know, I sent you 10 different issues, which have ranging from, I don't know, criminalization of ACLU petitioners in the you know, in the parking lot of the Trader Joe's, to people being criminalized for sitting near buildings, to abusive practices at city council that screen people out and that are civil rights in ways, civil liberties violations of those who are and also violations of the Brown Act, all kinds of issues that affect, you know, most of them directly affect homeless people, some of them not so directly, the city council issues, for instance. But you refused, and the ACLU has refused, to do anything on those issues at all. I mean, ACLUs in other cities take positions. They even do lawsuits. I'm not even asking you to do a lawsuit. I just ask you to say, it's not a good idea to arrest people sleeping outside when they have no other alternative. As an individual, you have done that, and I commend
you for it. Well, we did, and the ACLU,
but not as an organization and not as a member of the board of directors.
They wanted to have the curfews at Cal Beach, and we went over and made a statement specifically against that to council at Micah Posner's suggestion and request, and he didn't even support it.
I understand. You know? I don't give a shit about that. But you see, the city council, as far as I'm concerned, is, and I think we probably view it differently, I think it's the community that needs to be educated, not the city council. The city council couldn't give a shit. They are a plutocratically based group. You get special interest groups that put somebody
in. I think it's completely the other way around. I think the city council is the one that drives the bus, and everybody else just goes along with it because they don't want to really rock the boat, or they're not that interested in what city council legislates. Well, it's got to be changed. We're a strong city council.
It's the city staff that actually runs things, not the city council, as you know. The city manager
and course.
The city staff.
But still, but you get a strong progressive majority on city council, and you can start influencing some of the decisions that city manager makes.
And I don't want to...
Right now, they're just letting him make any decision he wants.
I don't want to slow you down, because I like your... Well, I don't know if I like your enthusiasm, because it becomes rhetorical after a while, but I saw
I'm a politician.
I know you are. I know you are. But, I mean, you're also a man who talks a lot about principles. And if you're just a politician giving me a lot of bogus crap about principles, I am not interested. But if you're a man who I've seen on occasion stand up for principles, I am interested. And I care about that kind of stuff. And I want to be supportive of that. And, you know, I know that when a council majority of four people was elected in 1998 as so-called progressives, with the support of, I wasn't entirely supportive because I was suspicious of them, and properly so, it turned out, including your friend Christopher Crone, who had me arrested at city council for making a mock Nazi salute when they were fucking over other people in their, you know, in the oral communications. But they were elected, and, you know, their progressiveness didn't go anywhere in Santa Cruz. I'm not saying you can't get together a majority to do that, but I think the way to do it is to impact the community. And I think there are a variety of ways to do it, and you've been trying those ways. You know, I mean, you've tried to sort of sneak into the board of directors and get your people on, and then maybe you can get past Mike Rutkin. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a bizarre approach to me, to the ACLU. Pat has something she wants to say.
Well, I have a comment, because I've worked at Cabrillo, and I've dealt with a lot of artists in this community. And I also went to that Michael Moore event, and I think the community wants things that the city council isn't doing. So I don't think it's really educating the community as much as getting people on the city council that represent what the community wants, rather than what the business interests or the more like the 1 or 2 percenters, the people that have the money in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Well, I think you and Steve are on the same page.
That's a valid point. I'm going to have to get on with my evening. I've got some people to see and hands to shake and babies to kiss. But I did want to mention that I'm hoping that you are mentioning the Save the 11 for the 11th for the 11 and Santa Cruz 11 support starting to generate a little bit more interest and awareness. And
I'd be talking about
really,
that. Are you going to be illegally parading without a permit plate?
Well,
or is the Constitution your permit? I don't know. What
The First Amendment is my permit.
Oh, also, there's a TPP protest in San Francisco. What is the Trans-Pacific Poo-Poo? What is it called?
Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Thank you.
That's the kind of new trilateral commission that's kind of being fast-tracked. But it's just the corporatization of America.
Is anybody going up there from Santa Cruz? I'm sorry, is anybody going up there from Santa Cruz that you know about as far as
the
caravan?
The only people that are really engaged in that from Santa Cruz are Wilf and Nancy Abbey and people like that. Randa Solik, those folks, perhaps they'll be going. But,
I haven't seen anything.
As you know, Robert, all politics are local, so we kind of have to...
Anything else in the next few days? Anything happening in the next few days or the next week that we should know about that you can let us know about that you've been aware of?
Well, as you know, that it looks like the Sunrise Hangout at the Circle Church, which is kind of a warming program, is looking to expand their hours to make it, you know, truly more accessible to people who are unsheltered at night in the cold and the rain. So
Saturdays.
I know we all applaud that. And, you know, Christopher Drury over there and Trevor done a great job, so you might want to mention that and have them get a hold of Christopher and see what
they need volunteers so they can open for more hours and days.
Yeah, they do need volunteers. That's coming up on Saturday between 4 a.m. and 9 a.m. in the morning out at the Circle Church, I believe.
Yeah, but they're they've been doing that. They had 20 people out this last time, but they're really thinking if it gets some traction that they might be able to expand the hours and get some more volunteers out there and really make it the kind of, you know, warming center that people have been talking about. So I think that's important to support Christopher and, of course, the Santa Cruz 11. And people should read John Malkin's article about
surveillance
city and the good times.
And the license.
The ACLU and the Minnesota Fourth, Mithra Bauman and Jay and I were organizing a forum.
Well, Steve, maybe we can get you to call back on Sunday when you may have more time. We could talk about some of these things. I mean, again, I guess the last thing I'd ask you is any street reports, anything you've seen downtown that you think needs to be commented on an individual basis that either concerned you or gave you heart, one of the two.
It seems like some of the downtown hosts
have kind of backed off a little bit in their treatment of the homeless folks. I see a bit more warmth from them. I haven't seen nearly as much of the First Alarm folks downtown, which is Blessed Relief, and it doesn't seem like we have as many sworn officers swarming downtown when one homeless person decides he's going to sit on a bench for more than an hour. So, you know, there are glimpses of hope now and again, but it's a battle every day.
And you haven't gotten any tickets for illegally being in a vehicle?
I can't say that with you, but let's just say that perhaps.
Keep it on the QT, I think.
Matt, take care of yourself. I'll talk to you soon. Robert, thanks for everything. Talk to you soon.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for calling in, man.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. I usually soft pedal my stuff when Plage calls in, but people can call in and comment. There is a call-in number, 427-3772, 427-3772. And, Pat, anything you want to say before
I
go back to Scott Collins?
I've seen there is a real compassionate community in here, but unfortunately a lot of people are being silenced by fringe groups that have their own agendas, because everyone I've met through Cabrillo and all the artists and all the young students really do have compassion and do care about the homeless and the poor issues, because they're part of the poor or the homeless at times. And, you know, there's a lot more support for people, but I know that a candidate needs to raise money. Maybe we need to have more bake sales.
Yeah, I'm not into the candidates particularly. I've never seen them do much good, and I think it's direct action to me that gets the goods. But, you know, I applaud candidates who stand up and speak about these issues, but I'm more impressed when they actually do something like engage in direct actions of different kinds.
Right, I believe in, like, protesting, because we have something that they don't have. We have numbers. We have masses.
We hope we have numbers.
Well, no.
Numbers that show up, I'd like to see. I've not seen much of that lately.
So people really,
we have illegal wars in Afghanistan and how many other countries, I don't know. We have an incredible surveillance scandal that's going on. And I don't see, people are just, the government is having to change because it's so obviously a bunch of lying criminals running the show. They have to sort of, somehow give a sort of a nice glisten or gleam or patina to their behaviors. My goodness. And
well,
actually,
I think
another phone call.
1984 is coming a little bit later than predicted.
Hey, caller, you're on Free Radio with Pat and Robert.
Hey, Pat and Robert. David Minton Silva here.
Hey, David.
I have this old hair up my ass that I have about the word homeless. I just have to vent every once in a while. I really prefer the word houseless. And anybody that needs a home, Santa Cruz can be your home. Let's open our hearts and open our homes and let people know that they can have a home if they're here. And the only problem is housing. Houselessness. Houselessness is a crime. In a country as modern as this, it's a crime. And thank God and bless you for being there and keeping people awake and alert, Robert.
And we'll be expecting your vets report very soon, David.
Very soon, yeah. I have a couple of big veterans meetings coming up, and I hope to have some real good news real, real soon. Talk to you soon.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, let's hear a little more of Scott Collins and the bicycle bullshit that they pulled at City Council on Tuesday.
And we've renewed our efforts recently to encourage greater licensing of bikes, both in terms of city participating at events and organizations that we partnered with to help encourage licensing. But still, we find most of the bikes that come through are unlicensed and therefore become city property after about 90 days.
I suppose this is relevant in the sense that, there's a lot of bicycles that the police get, supposedly, and why aren't they giving them to the bike church? It would solve the problem, and it did for 4 years. But they're not, he's not going to talk about that. Instead, this becomes the basis for a micromanaged series of proposals, probably proposed by the police department, to press their agenda about requiring licensing of bikes. So this will mean that if a poor person wants to get a bike through the teen center, it's going to have to be licensed. And there's also a whole micromanaging proposal put into the it's put into at least two of the three proposals. It wasn't in the auctioning proposal because that wasn't really relevant, because it gets auctioned, then all the money gets sent back to the
I don't know whether it's the general fund or wherever it goes into the city coffers somewhere. Maybe it may go to youth services, but it doesn't get bikes to people. But these are elements of the police agenda that couldn't get passed directly through city council, though I don't know why not, given the right-wing flavor of the city council. But maybe it's, you know, too many bicycle people would come roaring into city council and say, I don't want you to license my fucking bike. Thank you very much. We don't need that kind of regulation in Santa Cruz, even if it helps the police pick up stolen or abandoned bicycles. I mean, and I would say it certainly would be helpful, and if a person wants to register their bike, they certainly should be allowed to. But now this is a mandatory part of this proposal, and I think it's still a mandatory, I believe it's a mandatory part of the teen center proposal as well, although I could be wrong. Maybe it was just only the bike church would have to register bikes, or somebody chosen by this call for this request for proposals that didn't get passed, that was supposed to be the avenue that covers the police department's ass so they don't have to explain why they stopped giving bikes to the bike church, but instead it can be resumed through a neutral legal process that's transparent, where everybody gets to say, well, does any other nonprofit want to take over this rather onerous job? And if they don't, well, here's the bike church again. They don't want the bike church. The whole reason it was originally stopped, I don't want to say illegally, but certainly through a political motivation that involved a partisan attack on an ideological attack on a group that was providing services and bikes, not just to youth, but also to homeless people and poor people. Now, city bikes were not supposed to go to homeless people, but to youth, and there was no indication that the bike church gave them to homeless people. They gave other bikes to homeless people, is what they tell us. And so we're going to hear some more of Scott Collins. You had something you wanted to say, Pat?
I just was thinking, you know, with they get so many bikes that aren't picked up by their owners, and it kind of goes to, what is the time that they, isn't it 1 hour?
You can pick up lost, or you can pick up property that's been confiscated by the police, and maybe it's also property. I guess I would imagine it's probably property like
that's been stolen. When I was in the lobby.
It may be. I think it's a 2 hour period every Tuesday and Thursday. I think between 12:30 and 2:30.
And what kind of evidence do you have to bring in to try to get your?
Well, I imagine you have to have ID, but again, I don't have all the specifics. But it's a. You know, it's a situation that. So let's hear some more of Scott Collins meandering on, I should say, presenting this phony series of three options, which weren't really a real choice to begin with, and certainly didn't restore the bikes to the bike church, but provided the possibility. But there wasn't really a possibility, because it had been decided, it seems to me pretty clearly, though I don't have a smoking gun, in advance that this was going to...
Like a no-bid process, but they present it as an open bid?
Right.
But they already know who they're going to give the bid to?
Well, the teen center was the alleged recipient. We have a newcomer who has wandered into the studio and wishes to
create
his own program, when he's abandoned his program on the free radio. This is, of course, his Free, the notorious host, whose name I've spoken. Let's hear some more, Scott, unless Free, you want to say something before we continue. Okay. So let's go ahead.
You just entered our playhouse. I want to.
Under the Santa Cruz Municipal Code, we have a couple options. The city manager is authorized under a couple options to dispose of these bicycles. The first is to auction or retain bicycles for city purposes, and the other alternative is to donate bicycles to youth-serving nonprofits or charities to provide them to at-risk youth. In the actual language, it's, you know, it's juvenile delinquency, but that's a little antiquated term. So we've, you know, in a sense, revised it to at-risk or youth in need. I think that means the same thing, though. So I'm just going to go briefly over the history of the program and the goals of the program. For the longest time, the city operated the surplus program under an auction system, and that would include bicycles and all other surplus items that are, you know, that we had owned. But transitioned that over time to a city distribution program whereby bikes were given to youth-serving local nonprofits and charities, mainly for the main goal of getting bikes to kids in need. As we understand, there's a lot of benefits to youth who otherwise wouldn't be able to have a bicycle. We also want to balance that with the the competing demands of understanding a balance of staff time required to execute such a program. And over time, that evolved into a third-party distribution system whereby a local nonprofit served as the hub or distributor, if you will.
Things that aren't being said here. One of them is, he's talking about the bike church. It was the third party. But the reason that the bike church entered was because it turned out the bikes were being put in landfills, as I understand it, or being auctioned off and not being distributed. We have a caller, however. Let's see what this caller has to say. Hey there, caller. You're in the studio with, well, you're not, but we are, Free Pat and me. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, remember, turn down your radio in case you haven't already.
Yeah. Need more garlic.
Sorry, what are you saying?
Salinaville.
This is a man who is... Tú hablas español, ¿verdad?
Sí, yo hablo español.
Mi español es muy pequeño. ¿Qué quieres?
Salino, ¿por cuándo?
¿Qué?
Salino.
¿Salino?
Salino.
I'm not sure who you're talking about. ¿Es un otro hombre que trabaja para Free Radio?
Okay.
It's the wrong broadcaster. Try again later. Más tarde, señor, posiblemente. ¿Verdad?
Okay.
And mea culpa, my apologies to Spanish-speaking people, by the way, that we actually have a new collective member who can speak Spanish and is willing to translate, but... We haven't yet been able to translate that translation capacity into something really meaningful and tangible. Let's hear more. Collins, again, is giving a history, which he carefully does not mention the bike church until later in this discussion, though that really is sort of the key issue here. But you're going to be shortly hearing the rationale that the police department stopped the providing of bikes to the so-called third party. And that's the third party here. The unnamed third party is the bike church.
Providing bikes to other nonprofits who then provided bicycles to youth. But in recent years, there were some issues that arose with the distributor at that time. City line staff had issued a number of complaints about from multiple departments that found that the program was burdensome to staff, typically requiring four or five staff members from different departments to execute the distribution. In addition to that, there were inconsistencies in terms of when the drop-offs and that coordination would occur, which further impacted staff's time, but also their ability to manage storage facilities. And public works staff had to haul off unwanted bikes and parts at the city's expense and time after the distribution took place. And there was no established point of contact at this organization to handle these concerns. Unfortunately, the city communicated a decision to move to a different organization after the fact.
Let's pause here. So I want to be very fair to Scott Collins and the Santa Cruz Police Department, because this is the first time ever that there has actually been a statement, a public statement, of why they stopped distributing bikes to the bike church. So let us review what he just said. And what he said was that they had to stop it because it was burdensome to staff. The City Line staff had multiple complaints, and I put in a Public Records Act request for that and received nary a complaint. So it must have been all verbal, or maybe they didn't go back far enough. Maybe I have to do it again. Requiring a four or five staff members to execute the distribution. Since it simply required them to drop off the bikes at the bike church, as I understand it, though perhaps we should hear more about this from Steve Schnarr, maybe he'll talk about it more, that was not actually accurate. Or if it was, it contradicts the account given by those with the bike church. So what else was the concern? Well, there were inconsistencies as to when drop-offs and coordination offers occurred and coordinating, which impacted staff time and managing of storage facilities. I guess what they're meaning to say is the bikes were piling up and they didn't, they wanted to get them out of storage. And I could appreciate that. But they also claimed that they had to haul off unwanted bike and parts with no established point of contact. And he does admit that they did not announce they stopped the distribution of this until later, after, actually it was months later, after it was done. And it was only found out because Steve Schnarr, this is according to his account, called the police department and said, why aren't the bikes showing up? It's been, you know, a longer period of time. And he got this answer that they were instead giving them to the Bike Dojo, a for-profit group who's, as I mentioned before, who's... partner was friends with the mayor's, then Mayor Bryant's spouse, a pedicab service. And it's not that they were making a lot of money off of this, but it's more that this became a convenient sort of way of routing out the bike church, reading it out of the picture. And without any kind of honest, hey, we're having the following five problems. Our city staff has got multiple complaints, which we'll show you. Or we're trying, you know, we're requiring four or five people to execute this, which we can't do. Or perhaps the drop-off point is unclear. Or we're having to manage storage facilities, and it's becoming difficult. Or we have all these unwanted bike parts. None of this was mentioned to the bike church, which leads me to believe that this is an after-the-fact rationalization of what they did. It is a cover story because it certainly seems abusive, both in terms of the political force of it and also in terms of its impact on kids not getting their bikes, because they didn't for 2 years get the number of bikes that were being distributed through the bike church to the five nonprofits and others.
Are you saying cops don't care about kids?
I am saying that... you better move closer to the mic so I can hear you, because otherwise there's this tiny voice in the distance.
You definitely aren't a tiny voice.
But you are a tiny voice. Go ahead. Let's turn out here. I'll turn on your mic.
Are you saying kids, the cops don't like kids? I mean, that's who was hurt by this. Well, it's not really the bike church.
I'm saying that children have to, they should know their place, and part of the place is to follow the police agenda, which is primary here, which is seems to be to disadvantage certain groups that certain other groups, such as, I don't know, I don't have any evidence that Take Back Santa Cruz had its fingers in this pie, or that that Councilmember Robinson had her fingers in this pie, or that other conservative groups had their fingers in this pie. But, you know, certainly we aren't getting a clear explanation, and Scott Collins is giving us...
And also because they wouldn't fulfill FOIA requests of the emails... You know, how
they wouldn't give
we,
us the public records
right.
around the issues.
What are they trying to hide?
Find out what's going on.
And that, of course, is
the
issue.
And why would they hide something? Because they probably did something wrong.
That's the point. And that's the reason that
they don't like you photographing them on the street either.
I was very, you know, that's when Micah Posner shows up at these Huff meetings with his politician smile and is really very sincere. And he is sincere. I think he does want to help. And he really would like to feel he's a caring guy. But the problem is the balls are just not there to deal with these issues. Although he seemed to be somewhat upset by this latest turn of events. Mm-hmm. And I've heard mutterings of his, we talked about doing a bike distribution ourselves to publicize what's going on, although at our latest meeting I believe you, Free, suggested it was too late to do that because the bikes would be eventually distributed, some of them, not all of them, not as many, through the teen center.
Yeah, I mean, the kids are getting the bikes now. Well, probably
they
very
aren't
few,
getting,
very few. Wait, it hasn't happened yet.
No.
So, but, I mean, in the public's mind, it's going to the teen center. I mean, that's... The public doesn't care if the bike church gets bikes.
I understand. Although some of the public does, if they're aware of the bike church, and they feel that something funny has been happening.
Well, those people already know all about it, and they know this is just a crock
of shit. Well, I don't know.
Shit.
The people who came to the city council didn't seem to be talking about that issue at all. They spent their time, and this is one of my objections to this whole city council meeting that happened on Tuesday, talking about the bike church is a worthy group, instead of the police department is a slimy group. Now, what the hell is going on here? The city staff is engaging in a bunch of lying behaviors that are designed to punish a group of people that is providing, and they're denying bikes to kids.
Well, they want to punish the bike church, but they're really punishing children.
The activists who came to city council did not make this clear to the community.
No.
Neither 2 years ago when it happened, or 6 months after that when the Bike Dojo was revealed as essentially stashing bikes and not giving them away.
Mm-hmm.
Or a year later when the city manager you know, made a promise to provide an open process. It was all about, you know, oh, if we're nice enough,
waiting.
If we behave properly and don't blow the cover of these people.
Don't rock the boat.
Yeah, don't reveal. Don't reveal the real process that's going on. They needed to do it, and they still need to do it.
Mm.
It is still important. Yes.
Well, I have a challenge. Anyone who's gotten a bike through the teen center, any teen that's gotten them, why don't you call? And
right
tell
now.
Us you got a bike.
All you teens who are listening into this show.
Well,
yeah.
Or
give
the
it away,
parents of these teens or these children that got
yet,
a bike.
Right? They've just been approved and they're
please,
getting
please call
right.
up and
you
tell
know,
us when
future.
It happens.
This is going to happen down,
that it's happening.
Down the road, of course. let's I'm not going to play any more of Scott Collins because I really have had enough of him and this whole process. It's not boring.
Yeah,
it's sort
it's
of sickening.
It's just a whitewash.
This whole thing
like
is kind
said,
of sickening.
It's just a pretext.
What I am going to do, however, is play some street reports and street interviews and get some perhaps reactions from the two of you. If you haven't, and also give the people outside the opportunity
make sure
to speak.
You check
yeah,
down
like I did at the warming meeting. Do I have to hold up my hand for like 20 minutes while the topic I wanted to say something on is like three
so
away?
So you're talking about the warming meeting that two weeks ago that you went to, or a week ago?
Well, yeah, almost 3 weeks.
You know, I mean, I frankly, I've criticized the warming meeting process, and I've criticized their failure to provide for an emergency response, which is what they need to do.
Well, there's big progress happening there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that one. I mean, the sanctuary camp would probably never happen, but there's big progress happening on the warming
no,
center
how
because
so.
They have these in other cities. You know, it's well understood by all the charity groups involved. United Way has already agreed to host the phone number 211, which you would call when it gets really cold to find out where the warming center is going to
so
be.
So there will be a warming center
well, they're working
when it gets
it's a bunch of
really
different diverse
cold.
Volunteer groups that have to come together, and
I
there has to be like a telephone tree.
I think it's because the churches really want to help the people.
Churches are ready to do it now, but they can only do it after 10 p.m. because they have other programs. So it's going to be difficult to get. But other cities have done this. It can be done.
I'm
and
not as
no
persuaded.
It, really.
It's not as sanguine as you are about this, even though it's obviously an important idea. Mm-hmm. For the same reason that you know. Homeless people's property is routinely destroyed. Homeless people are treated like shit.
Oh, but it was
shit.
Assured that, you know, I read somewhere that the police assured us that they never, when they go and they give warnings at the camps,
right,
that
right.
They never.
They store all the property.
But that was kind of funny because my friend has a friend, Hawk, who's a homeless person, great person. And
is Hawk with a bicycle?
Well, yeah, he does go and work on his bike at the bicycle.
No, he has a long bike. Trailer and so forth. That's the Hawk I know.
Yeah,
probably
yeah.
Probably
so,
the same person.
But you know, he's had to bring stuff that's been destroyed and thrown in the mud by the police. And thank goodness, my friend has offered to put the stuff in the washer. And they've had stuff broken and ruined. But then the police say, because you know when the police say something,
well,
it's true.
But, right. But to focus back to this issue, free apparently is sanguine about this warming center. And I know you like to think you've got.
Well, I don't know if we'll get it this year, but I think it
well,
will happen.
I am concerned.
I am concerned
that if people members of the community are interested in this, they can do something about it immediately, which is to agree on a cold nights to come down and you know they can occupy the transit center. They can occupy the civic auditorium. They can set up a tent.
Well, that requires government
set up. No, it just requires doing it and then embarrassing the government if they want to throw people out. It's very simple.
Well,
it's,
you
it's
have to get
done,
into the metro.
It's
center.
Been now you walk into the metro. It's open. The metro center is open.
Not after.
Yeah, well, you walk in before they close. When it's dark.
Oh, okay.
You know,
you
I mean, it's not that hard.
Similarly
with the civic. You know, yeah. If other people were gone, I don't mind getting arrested for that if necessary. But the fact
but there
that,
are churches willing
but
to
the
do
fact,
it.
Well,
right
that they haven't yet. One church has offered to do it 3 days a week between 4 and 9 a.m. in the morning. That's the Circle Church, and that's what, by the way, what Steve Plaich was talking about when he called in earlier. And you know, my hats off to that church for doing it. Although it seems an unusual time to do it from 4 to 9, but you know, okay,
it's a start.
I'm sorry.
But
I don't know. It's not a start.
Mean.
It is a token effort by one church, and it's bullshit in terms of dealing with the issue. And activists who somehow say, well, you know, in a year or so, it might happen.
No, a year's too long.
No, we got other cities have done it, and we're moving on the right road. It
are
sounds,
you putting me down?
I'm putting down the opinion that you're expressing. I don't agree with it. So anyway,
well, I mean, there's so many other things.
I don't really want to spend
happen.
A lot of time on it because
happen.
I don't think it's going anywhere in terms of something immediate that could actually help people in the near future.
I wish it would. Yeah, I wish it would, too. But,
yeah,
you know.
And I do, too. And if it does happen, then I will
It may happen in a couple weeks or something. Who knows?
I don't know if I will salute them. I will stop giving them the finger. How's that?
But I just this is one of those issues where I don't see anyone opposed
to it.
Better
be careful where you give people the finger.
But nobody's doing it. That's the problem.
Well,
nobody's opposed
to it. Well, how many people protested the bike?
No one's opposed.
For 2 years, there was no protest on that.
Exactly, exactly.
There's a lot of
shit
not happening in Santa Cruz that could be happening.
Nothing is being done. Still, the teen center will give 20 to 25% of the we allow swearing on the air, actually, and we even allow Free to engage in interruptions, as you can say. You notice from the meetings, which
yes,
Free is.
I never drink the coffee. I take the interruption.
But he is.
There is free coffee.
But I'm here to kick him.
Yes, you are here to kick him if he interrupts too much.
That's
my official job. In any case, if people want to call in and they've got things to say on this issue, that's fine. We're going to turn to people on the streets who can't call in because they don't have phones, don't have the money, don't give a shit about this particular program, but they have actually spoken about the issues, and so let's hear what they have to say. And more important, let's hear their experiences. So.
We're downtown watching Curtis Relliver on top of his flag waving double long country gentleman's landscaping vehicles, which have large messages festooned on the side, plus his phone number, 246-4240, seeking gas money. And we have some contestants on the street who may or may not be taking up Curtis's challenge to do some dancing.
This is a huge vehicle he has. It's a double long vehicle. And he takes supplies to different disaster areas, whether it's the Hopi Reservation or New Orleans, or I don't know, I don't know what he did in 9/11. He might have been doing it, taking stuff to New York City. Not sure what he was doing. But he's an African-American guy, walks around town dressed to the nines in a suit and tie, and he's always looking, neat as a pin, like he came out of the Board of Supervisors, so which isn't much a recommendation, but he is a recommendation because he cares a lot about this. And he gets a lot of shit. He gets ticketed, he gets hassled. He was one of three people who in 2010 were cited by the police for being in the DIY New Year's parade. Along with Wes Modes and Whitney Wilde, he was a victim of Sergeant Harms, who Michael Harms, a very well-spoken police officer, very sweet guy, who gave some nice tickets to people who were exercising their First Amendment rights. And I think that kind of fear being spread also by Deputy Chief Steve Clark and by the mayors and council members, some of them, Matthews, and I think Robinson particularly, and Rotkin, have diminished the number of people who have come to the DIY parade on New Year's Eve and the amount of time they're willing to spend there and their willingness to say who they are. And this is a chilling thing that is happening in Santa Cruz. But Relliford is the opposite. He was having people dance. It was like Martin Luther King Day when this was happening or around there. He had a big Martin Luther King display, and everybody likes to use Martin Luther King and forget what he was really doing, which was fighting the Vietnam War and fighting for rights for workers and all kinds of stuff that mainstream America, or mainstream political America, now opposes. I would say mainstream Americans probably don't oppose it, that or I would hope they don't oppose it.
And dancing. And Curtis is dancing 10 feet in the air on top of his vehicle. But the folks on the sidewalk are not reciprocating, so we'll just move along. Listening to a man in front of the Pacific Trading Company doing some guitaring. Making a few dollars here on the street.
the music of?
Lenny Sales.
And Lenny, is this the original stuff?
These are all my songs. On the CDs, I do covers too out here.
Any street songs about life on the streets?
I have one called Beg, Steal, and Borrow.
You want to play it and sing it?
Yeah, sure, I'll do that.
I'll put it on the radio.
Okay. It's called Beg, Steal, and Borrow.
Go for it.
Jeremy's watching his dog, sitting there fishing on the sidewalk. Ice cream's living the dream. So it seems we've all been here before, and we'll all be here tomorrow, doing the same damn thing, just a different day. Are we gonna just beg, steal, and borrow? Get himself some trees, so I reached in my pocket and gave him my weed. Don't look now, here he comes. It's my good friend, Mr. Kenny Chung, the next great American hero. And we've all been here before, and we'll all be here tomorrow, doing the same damn thing, just a different day. Just beg, steal, and borrow. Are we gonna just beg, steal, and borrow away? Away, yeah. Look at me, I'm on the street, singing my heart out to people who are half asleep. Can't believe it, but it's true. Walking by, shaming me with that look in your eye. If you only knew, we'd all been here before, and we'll all be here tomorrow, doing the same damn thing, just a different day. Are we gonna just beg, steal, and borrow? Are we gonna just beg, steal, and
and the name of the song is?
Beg, Steal, and Borrow.
Composed and sung by?
Lenny Sales.
Thank you, Lenny. I'm in front of the Pacific Thai restaurant talking with...
Johnny on the spot.
Johnny, you have a sign, one joke free, spelled P-H-R-E-E-E, an unusual spelling. Smile, smoke jokes, jokes for trade, bucks and brew, Thai food, again spelled with a P-H-O-O-D, I-O-U's, good times. Any comments about how life has been treating you on the sidewalk?
It's all right. I like it a lot because I get to see people smile and I get to really make people's day, especially when they're staring at the ground and I get to tell them a joke and I see them laughing and kicking their heels on the way away. Makes my day every day.
Kick down an occasional dollar. I see you have a dollar in front of you.
I get all different kind of kicks down. The best kind of kick downs I like is the company of people coming up and talking to me and, you know, hearing my story and listening to their story and just, you know, making somebody's day and changing their attitude for that time of being. But a lot of kicks down I've gotten from anything from money to being able to place a stay to a girlfriend.
And the last time you picked up a girlfriend was?
It was back in April 30th, and we stayed together for 4 months and told jokes together almost every day and traveled around.
You didn't leave her pregnant?
No, I did not.
Good for you.
She got engaged on my birthday this year, though. It happens.
Still friends?
No, we're not. I mean, we are, but we don't talk anymore. You know, stuff happens. She wanted to settle down and everything. And
you're a traveling man?
I'm a traveling man, but I came here to Santa Cruz to try to, you know, I put in job applications today and trying to spread the word and keep good spirits, show people, you know, I'm serious about doing what I need to do.
How long you been around?
I got here on my birthday, the 8th of January.
And how has Santa Cruz been treating you?
really well, you know. I mean, everybody's been really nice and kind. I go to the beach every day. I'm starting to get some color.
And how much money have you made sitting in this spot?
About $25 over the past 3 or 4 days.
And how many hours have you spent here total?
About 15 to 20, maybe 30.
So we're talking a dollar an hour?
Yeah, roughly.
You're a cheap date.
Oh, yes, sir, I am, but I'm a great time.
Well, give us a joke for the road.
Okay, let's see now, something good and clean. Why does the scarecrow win an award every year?
Tell me.
For being outstanding in his field.
And we've been listening to the questionable humor of...
Johnny on the Spot.
Thanks, Johnny. We're talking with...
James Richard Armstrong.
And you have a report here as we stand in front of Betty's Burgers.
Yeah, and what I wanted to point out was the police actually don't harass me as much as the people who think they're police. And I know why they're doing this, because the police don't want to deal with it. And so they're outsourcing their intolerance. And that's fine, because they don't want to get sued and all that shit. But you know what the problem is? You got these pseudo-cops who think they're cops, who think they know. There's one guy, the hostility asshole, and he's a nice kid, but I call him an asshole because he fucked with me. And he came up, and he's like, do you understand the panhandling? Well, he wasn't a prick about it. He goes, do you know about the panhandling rule of laws? And I said, I'm not panhandling because nothing on my sign is asking for money. Have a nice day. I'm making political statements. He left me alone, and he left me alone. And every time he sees me, he leaves me alone. They're outsourcing the shit because they don't want to deal with it, and they don't want the liability. So that's simple.
I mean, I don't know what the liability specifics
are. Well, it's called fucking with civil rights, and they don't want to deal with it.
Any comments from our in-studio legal eagle, Free?
Well, he's talking about first alarm or something. I mean, the individual officers usually have qualified immunity anyways, but the city still is liable for lawsuits for if they've hired these people to enforce their laws for them.
So
you can't
James,
hide by doing that.
Our speaker here is wrong. They're still liable.
I think it's deniability that we're talking about. If they have the first alarm cops doing it, then they can deny that they did anything, even though they hire them.
Well, they're responsible, though, legally. I don't know.
They have to make sure that these guys are trained and stuff. If they're out there. I mean, because they hired them, right? The city's hiring them.
Indeed.
You can't dodge liability like that.
If only we had an attorney or two. Or
well,
three.
No, a corporation can try and do it, and then they got insurance for that. See, it's a whole nasty, messy. I saw in Berkeley with Block by Block, who's full of shit too, and they're out of Kentucky. And
we have this, as you say, the hostility crowd.
Hostility.
Yeah.
They're passive aggressive. That's why they're not hospitality. They're hostility. It's bullshit, though. They try and I'm not saying things don't need to be regulated. I'm just saying these people are being tasked, and it's not even their fault.
Well, they aren't regular. We have guys like this dancing on the sidewalk.
Oh, my God, a guy dancing.
Dancing on the sidewalk. This is very demoralizing. I mean,
no.
This man is causing trouble. Look at him.
Yeah,
it's
obvious.
Shocking. Can nobody stop this man from dancing?
Why should he stop dancing?
I'm not going to come back and shop here anymore. I won't shop here if they dance. I can't. It's not good.
Whatever.
Yes.
We have a comment from our peanut gallery here.
Oh, wow. What a crime to be dancing and happy on the street. We gotta break down. You know, we got to knock that down, knock that out of him. No smiling,
well,
no dancing, no
we
happiness.
We can't have their kind around here.
Yeah, they're going to be contagious and corrupt our youth and our...
Free any comments.
I think dancing is allowed. It's bringing a blanket down there. That's the big crime.
You can't dance on a blanket.
Sitting near
you can have a blanket.
Yeah,
spread your shit on a blanket. You can't wrap
blankies.
It around you after 11.
No blankies downtown.
Blankets are the real threat to security in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, it's true. Let's hear some more from this situation.
I had to see a homeless guy the other day. I love that one. I had to see. You had to see it, huh? And what happened after you had to see it? Well, it made my butt hurt. Well, that's not what they said, but that's what I took it as.
I see.
Anyway.
Well, I will leave you. And again, we've been listening to the criticisms of...
Criticisms? No.
The critique?
No, the observations of James Richard Armstrong.
And there you have it.
Thank you, sir.
Tell me what you're telling me, James. There have been some pretty heavy shit stated about conversations with yours truly.
Yeah, supposedly you're like some bad guy who's just working for the feds. And whatever. Even if you were, so what? At least this word's getting out, and whatever, man. I don't think you are, but
Yeah. Little do you know.
Yeah, I maybe. I talked to people at Occupy in Oakland who, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. I talked to the Chronicle. They're definitely subversives. They're full of shit.
We have to pause for a caller. We've got more callers than usual. It's pretty cool. Hey, you're on Free Radio with Free, Pat, and me.
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I wasn't planning on it.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Is Steve Schnarr coming on tonight?
Steve Schnarr?
Schnarr.
He's not going to be coming on in person, but I did an interview with him earlier yesterday, and I'm hoping to reach that point.
Okay.
It's possible, though, because we're going a little slow, it may get dragged over till Sunday, so I may disappoint you.
No, that'd be okay. I think this is... I love the on-the-street interviews.
Really?
But I think the bike church issue is an issue that I'd be interested in hearing more about. What are they pursuing? And also what people in the community are pursuing in terms of the lack of transparency for an obvious... the law was clearly broken in this case. I mean, there is a municipal code that deals with how to deal with custody and sales of bicycles and toys, and it was violated. And I believe you and Steve have requested information pertaining to it, but magically there seems to be no documentation as to who made any of these decisions.
Yeah, I have put in at least two Public Records Act requests, one when Mayor Bryant was the Führer, so to speak, and the other when, Mayor Robinson came into power. Robinson's, they did send me some information, and all it was all the letters sent in by the bike church acolytes who were saying, the bike church is a great organization, as though this is going to make any difference to these clowns. It makes no difference whatsoever. But in fact, the actual inner workings of this process is, as I said, and as you noted, have not been revealed.
Was the request to the city alone, or did the scope include the police department?
All city departments, which includes the police department.
Okay, and so even though Collins claimed that there was a discussion of some sort as to magically that they were going to change contracts to who they were going to deliver the bikes to, that there's magically no correspondence in reference to this?
Yes, although unnecessarily fair to the police department, that conversation would have happened probably in 2011, in the November and December of 2011, in the months immediately before they took away the stuff. And I was interested in knowing Bryant's communications, and I guess, I don't think I requested Don Lane's communications, though he was mayor that year, the year this actually happened.
Well, I'd actually be interested in all of them because what's an interesting, just briefly, and then I'll let you get back to your show, but
sure.
Something that I had read and remembered in the back of my mind is when I read this pretty horrific article in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. The reporters there seem to have not a lot of great editorial sense, but I think it was by J.M. Brown. And there was a quote in there by Rob Miles.
Oh, yeah. He's a horrible guy.
Yeah, and so he actually was quoted in the article as saying that the city actually knew that the bike dojo was not a nonprofit, so basically that they were a for-profit. And so nevertheless, even though somebody in the city knew that they did not qualify for the terms of their own city municipal code, they still were given the bikes.
Yeah.
Which is a violation of
the city law. And, you know, what you need to do is, and what bike church people need to do is call the DA and demand that they be prosecuted.
Well, it is. There's something called the Bureau of Investigations through the Santa Cruz District Attorney's Office, and that's what they investigate. And I'm thinking that what would be good is if we can get the community to create a petition and demands and even protests, et cetera, so that we can get the Santa Cruz County District Attorney's Office, the Bureau of Investigations, which actually investigates misconduct by government officials, to open a case.
I think, that you should try to organize that. Do you want to give your first name for those of us who are, for our police records here?
No, but I think I know some of the people who might be interested, maybe someone who's
Well, then I would encourage you to
sitting there next to you. uh-huh. might be a helpful conduit to get the ball moving. In this
sure. Thing. I mean, but it has to...
Has anything come going through that office in the past?
Well, you know, it's actually, we were able... I mean, I think people showing up in massive numbers as a sort of a, you know, a pressure group is more effective or is good to do in conjunction with petitions and demands. I think, you know, you go to the mayor's office and you say, we want the public records and we want them now. We don't want to wait. You know, we put in public records our request. We want to know what the police department did, who they spoke to, you know, who made these decisions, what communications happened between then mayor, I think it was Rotkin, no, Coonerty was the mayor when in 2011, right before this happened. And so...
Which is why I was interested in when Steve, you know, as his communications goes on, because I don't know what they're planning. I don't know if that's part of their plan.
I don't think they're planning anything. That's the problem.
And that is a problem.
Yeah.
So that would be something that, as a group, as a community, I don't think this is any one group that should be interested. I mean, this is more to me than just about bicycles and kids, although bicycles and kids are very important. This is an issue of, at its base, not profit corruption, but it is corruption in terms of a process that was clearly violated by, it seems like, the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Yeah,
oh, yes.
I mean, it looks that way with the collusion of the staff.
Accomplices.
And, you know, the collusion of the city council. And I think again, that I think this is an interesting avenue. I hadn't even thought about it until you brought it up. You know, you can go to the grand jury and demand an investigation there. You can march over to the Board of Supervisors and ask if, I don't know, if there was any connections with any county agencies. Probably not.
Well, but, because if you ask and can actually get the Bureau of Investigations to petition them, or actually put forth a request, then at least that's on public record. If they actually opened one, then they can subpoena records, whereas with maybe, you know, information that's been magically lost through freedom of information hasn't been found, with the power of a subpoena, whether it's through the DA or even the state, a state attorney general could be interested if the DA decided to pass. So I'm just saying there's other avenues for this on a different level other than just, well, the kids didn't get as many bikes. An issue about transparency
but
and corruption.
I have trouble getting this past Mr. Free here, even at the Huff meeting, who feels the whole issue is dead and gone.
But the public support, to get those mass numbers, the public has to be interested in it. If the kids are getting bikes, the public just says, oh, the kids are getting bikes now, what do I care?
Why not follow through?
I think the issue is more than did the kids get bikes. The issue is, can the police department decide to unilaterally intervene in such situations?
Exactly.
And break the law.
And break the law.
Can the city break its own law?
And can they then cover it up this bogus process that they used on Tuesday? And I think...
Well, if someone in the city knowingly, as was quoted by Rob Miles in this article, somebody in the city knew that his bike dojo was not a nonprofit, then therefore somebody knew that they were breaking the law.
You know,
who made the decision?
Ironically, the one way to do this, we might go to, you know, demonstrate outside the bike dojo.
It could be.
And
it
pressure
could be.
Miles and into overreaching himself, which he does quite regularly.
Didn't he donate?
He's a passionate fellow, and
I saw a picture somewhere where they donated $5,000 to the cops or something.
Yes.
On IndieBay.
That's correct. That was my understanding.
Well, there's a big, if you go to the bike dojo blog, on page 2 of the blog, there's a big picture of the three top SCPD, the chief, the assistant chief, and the assistant chief, with Hillary Bryant and Rob, and I think Pamela, I'm not sure if Pamela Comstock is in that photo, but it's Rob and his wife, and they're all standing there happily with a check that's being presented to
the police department. It's all about the Butchie Baker deal.
John,
right.
John,
matter who was getting, I don't know the connections. All I know is that it seems like this is a clear case of misconduct. And since no one in the city or regular citizens are seeming to get traction, it could be something that we could get traction via asking the District Attorney Bureau of Investigation.
You know, a relatively small number of protesters who have a persistent agenda and go around the different agencies and turn it into a publicity and get some, you know, make some puppets and some costumes could really, I think, have an impact on this. But it has to be people who are determined to do it, and they would draw others. I mean, I'd be supportive of that if somebody wanted to take the lead. Anonymous caller, if you know what I mean.
Well, I would be interested in taking the lead in terms of proceeding or helping perhaps with the legal aspect.
Oh, good.
In terms of trying to get the argument so that whoever was a spokesperson would actually be able to make a coherent statement mm-hmm. to the press that, you know, hopefully would be invited. Because what? That's part of the issue, is that you have about 15 seconds on any snippet that, you know, of press, and you have to sound... You have to make your piece and mm-hmm. your argument in that short bit of time mm-hmm. to put mm-hmm. the pressure on the Bureau of Investigations and Mr. Lee to take up the case.
Well, Lee has his hands full. I mean, he's got these criminals from
well,
Santa
yeah.
Cruz 11 coming up.
Yeah,
he's got to deal with that.
He's got the vandals taking the handle, so yeah. Mm-hmm.
These are city laws, right? So isn't it the responsibility of the city attorney to enforce them?
No, the district attorney prosecutes crimes.
The Bureau of Investigations is allowed to suspect, to investigate misconduct by officials that come within, or public employees as well, that come within their jurisdiction.
And you might be right, too, Free. I don't know. But if you call me...
I wouldn't do the city attorney just because he might be involved.
Well, he's obviously involved.
Why don't you call me off-air on 423-HUFF and leave me a number where I can reach you and I'll get
okay,
back
great.
To you.
Can I say something else?
Sure. And caller, anything else you want to say before we...
No.
Well, I wanted to say something
You've
to her.
You've said too much already, probably.
You should put this new star thing
say
on,
that,
too, because you promised to put it on Indy Bay.
That my
Thank
brother
you,
would be real interested, and his Facebook account is John Cohen.
Okay.
And he does FOIA requests, and he does things to different bureaus of investigation.
He
tries to go through the governmental, open, transparency, legal agenda.
I think that would be great. I just think that someone with teeth and subpoena power might have to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And
you could always have a civil suit to have subpoena power as well.
We'll leave you to
I'm
put
not
that together.
Wasting my time on that one.
All right. Let's hear some more from the streets. Enough of this crap from the bike church. And
no, let's hear the station. You promised to have
us on Indy Bay.
Nope. You're lying to the public again.
Indy.
This is an outrage.
Indy.
An outrage.
It's my fault. I'll take
It's her fault.
Full
We're
going to
blame
for
Pat.
It.
Just get the word out.
I agree. Thank you, James.
You're welcome.
So I'm getting a report here on the street. Earlier I heard that 5 people died in the last week, but now I'm getting a report that...
14 people
do we
in
have
the last week.
Do we have the names of these people or just the number?
Just the number. There was one woman that we did have the name of, but it eludes me.
There's
Allison.
There's Suzanne. There's Baltimore. There's... Bobby McGee, there's Mary Ann, and there's somebody else. But that's the ones I heard. But
these are homeless people who died in the last couple of weeks, according to other homeless people. And I haven't gotten any confirmation either from the coroner or seen anything in the newspapers.
We've been talking with
Cody.
And, of course, the strong but silent
Freedom.
Very good. And, of course, the pooch known as... The nameless pooch.
No, not the nameless pooch. What? Bingo? No,
and, of course, Freedom is still maintaining her famous word fast. She's holding fast.
I'm still
to the
learning.
Fast. You're learning how to...
Speak with freedom.
How to speak with freedom.
Violently.
Indeed. Well, may the be with you. Here in front of Supper's Cafe, Wednesday, the 22nd of January, around 11:10, and I'm talking with...
Wayne.
And Wayne, you're a man who often tries to use hotels, but you're a man of limited income.
Yes.
And you've been having some problems in the past. You thought that the winter had kind of maybe mellowed things out, but maybe that's not true?
I've seen some changes over the years. I've noticed that the hotel people they often have to work on the hotels at the end of the year, at some point during the year, sometimes in the summer, sometimes in the winter, but they've gotten where they kick people out in the earlier and earlier, you know, in the dead of winter. I think it's kind of a tough time to usher people off. In some hotels, I know a lot of places, they offer you other places before they go to just kicking you out, you know. If they're trying to move you out without a reason, they at least are nice about it. Or
New York, they can't even kick you out during the wintertime. It's illegal to kick somebody out in New York in the wintertime. Google will shut their bills off in the wintertime.
I think that's actually why California is so funny about it, because of the weather here. You know, they have no qualms about pushing out, because it is nice. I mean, it's not like we're going to die. But at the same point, I have a good point to make about this. What they're doing is they're kicking out the decent people And the junkies and the speed freaks have a way of finding people to rent the rooms, and what they're doing right now is destroying all the hotels in Santa Cruz. And I wish these hotel owners would listen to people, because that's exactly, they're doing it on purpose. They're mad at the hotels just like we are, but they're taking it out on them. We're not. And the hotel owners, I've been witnessing their bathrooms being destroyed regularly, among other things. And, you know, one example, for example, the Santa Cruz Inn, the lady cussed the guy out. Unrighteously so, I believe, because she threatened the guy and made him feel really, you know, scared. Some people might do it out of reaction. Well, he turned the plumbing, he busted open the pipe, the main pipe, and it flooded the entire hotel. Cost her $20,000. So
you should learn to talk nice to her tenant.
I think so. You know, I noticed that I don't hear her screaming like that. And they've also gotten rid of everyone. But once again, how long can they write this off? I feel as if they need to do, like, an outside investigation on what these hotels are up to, because they're ruining this town. They're taking the good people and pushing them away, including the musicians.
Those little boxes. They have these little boxes.
We're talking with...
They have these... Princess Lala.
Lala.
They have these little boxes that they monitor how many people go through town during the holiday seasons, the tourist seasons, and they start marking the prices up on the account of how many people are actually driving through town.
So when you say kicking people out, Wayne, you mean like raising the prices of the rooms?
No, they just flat tell everyone leave.
And on the basis of...
They have no excuse. They came up with little petty excuses, but there was no ever real excuse. They just said, you know, I would feel better if they just called me a homeless bum and told me to leave.
So what exactly did they say to you that, and when did they say it?
Well, my manager called me out of the blue and said that they had poked their head into my room, so they thought there was another person, and they wanted me to leave that night.
That's illegal.
That's illegal in itself, and I've also had the manager walk into my room and say that it was too messy, which was not true at all, and then met me at the front desk when I'm paying for my room and said, you got to leave.
And when did these two incidents happen?
Well, the first one was 3 years ago at the Beach Inn, and the last one just happened the other night at the Pacific Inn, and it's the same owner, which is the same group of conglomerate of Indian people who I'm starting to wonder. I believe they give money to Al-Qaeda. I believe that it's a terroristic threat. After 9/11, that was the number one threat that they could come up with, was that they're going to ruin our hotel businesses and that ruin tourism. I've actually heard tourists talk about how they talk on the internet and they're afraid of Santa Cruz and their hotels. It's affecting tourism, which is my whole point, that they could be sued on that if it was proven that they're not renting the rooms and that they're actually running people off. You know, and making it inhospitable for people that work and live in the winter.
I encourage you to get further accounts of this from people. And, of course, people are kind of, you know, afraid to stand up on these issues or feel it's futile often.
Yeah.
But, you know, many fingers can't do much, but a fist can get together.
All right, get people together. More people talk. And I tell everyone every day now. I let people know, don't go to these hotels. I let them know exactly the element that's happening so that people can see it. And I actually, talking to people, I found that the other people find it's true, too, including local. This is what gets me. Local residents of California are being told not to go to these hotels because they have a California ID. How can they say that a California ID means you're local when there are people 500 miles away that come to Santa Cruz for vacation and then they're stuck here with no room? I mean, that's crazy.
And we've been talking with?
Wayne, yeah.
And?
Bala.
Thank you.
And actually, this kind of ties in with something I brought up at City Council, but you got to have an ID or they won't rent you a room law passed by the City Council in 2010 and passed again at the last City Council meeting in a second reading, allowing the police to, with the cooperation of the innkeeper or by subpoena, if he won't cooperate, if there's a probable cause, to examine the lists of people who are in these rooms. I pointed out that this, of course, obviously unduly impacts homeless people who may not have IDs or may have been taken by the police, as has happened on a number of occasions, according to the accounts of homeless people. Or it allows police officers who have a burr in their saddle for particular individuals who have parole or probation search clauses to be able to just walk into their rooms, learning where they live, and just see what's going on. Now, it's true that they have to report to the parole or probation officers on these issues as to where they live, but police officers would have to go out of their way to find that out. They're just kind of wandering through and checking hotel lists. You know, then they got somebody they want to torment, they can do that. And you might say, wow, police officers torment people? Why would they bother? Well, why do they bother going after poor people on the streets in downtown Santa Cruz? Pat, you have something you want to say?
Yeah, it's your tax dollars at work.
Indeed.
For good causes.
Indeed. Let's hear some
sarcasm.
Indeed. Let's hear some more from the street.
Hello, and Wayne.
Yeah, come here.
Wayne, you have something else?
Yeah, I've been noticing that Carl, the owner of Pergolisi, has been having a really tough time with the people on the sidewalk. And the Santa Cruz has cracked down on coffee and cigarette use so much that none of the coffee shops really have too many people smoking around them, which is fine. I understand their point. But now everyone's pushed to the one place, and I feel like Carl's taking the pinch for it. And it's kind of...
You mean the side street? Or?
Yeah, it saddens me because a lot of it is just either the kids waiting for their parents for their bus, I mean, to get picked up. And I've watched the police tell them to leave, and they're telling them, okay, I'm waiting for my mom. What am I supposed to do? And they're like, I don't care. Get out of here, kid. And that's, the, to me, putting those kids in danger.
Well, it's, it also, really it's also unconstitutional to tell someone to leave.
That's what I told
them. I suppose you can ticket them for smoking if you want.
But, yeah, it just does sadden me because I actually have seen these kids walk right into trouble. If they go into some of these side streets and stuff, it's not that safe. And then also the neighborhoods have been telling everyone, to, even the kids, to not hang out, which I understand that, too. But I feel like the kids have less and less places to go, and that is troubling to me. And I watch them. They'll run into Pergolisi out of fear from the cops. And then the people in Pergolisi are kicking them out. And it's kind of saddening. When you're seeing people being kicked one way to the another way, to the another way. And I even told the cop one day, I go, you know, if you were to sit here and actually watch what's happening, you would see that these kids are being pushed from one side to the other. Where does it end, you know?
I've always been a walker. I've walked a lot.
Thank you, Wayne.
And actually, that was an issue that we were going to talk about on Free Radio in more detail with two guys who are going to come in talking about the specific problems at the Pergolisi, which actually prompted us to do our Backpack Bigotry Educational Research Please Post Your Non-Discrimination Pledge Walk that we did last Saturday after the Food Not Bombs meal. And we actually went around to the different cafes, as I think I mentioned on Sunday at the Sunday show, and we found that not the Pergolisi, but three other cafes, the Coffee Roasting Company, Starbucks, and Pete's, specifically bans people with backpacks from coming in, which really means they ban homeless people who have no other place to put their survival gear from coming in. And they ban disabled people who have a problem similarly in the same way. So we'll be talking about this issue again on Saturday, probably around 4:30, again near the Food Not Bombs meal. And I should make it clear, we are not, suggesting that Food Not Bombs endorses what we do, though I suspect a number of them do. But we are in a public place, so we're near them, and it's a place where people gather to eat, so it's a place where people can express, you know, whether they have been discriminated.
Steps.
Where they've been discriminated against. It's on the post office steps where
Occupy steps,
near
actually.
Way Food Not Bombs feeds, and that's every Saturday, 4 o'clock. We'll be there at 4:30.
4:20.
And I guess some will be there at 4:20. I may be there at 4:26. I'm not sure quite.
I'm thinking 4:21 is my time.
And you're going to be there at 4:21. So we have a number of... if you come sometime in that area, you'll be able to meet all the celebrities that you've really dreamed about meeting coming off the air on this show.
You get free food at Food Not Bombs.
And you get free food, and you get... actually, there's an interesting community of people who show up there. And it's... Food Not Bombs is a growing situation. They're actually talking about opening meals on Friday and Sunday as well as Saturday. And that may happen if enough people are interested, and also they're going to need some donated kitchens. If you want to get involved with Food Not Bombs, check them out on the Facebook page, Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs. I think they also have a website, but I'm not quite sure what the actual web address is. But if you browse for Food Not Bombs, Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs, you'll probably find something around that issue.
Also, they need volunteers.
And Food Not Bombs does need volunteers. So, let's hear some more, because we're running toward the end of the show. And hopefully we'll hear from Steve Schnarr next Sunday. Actually, it would be great if we had him in person or called him, because there's some breaking stuff. I mean, the suggestion that we heard from the caller that we have, that there be a complaint made to, I guess it's the Bureau of Investigations, he suggested,
right.
That could... I've never heard of such a thing. I don't know what the Bureau of Investigations is. It's first new to me. I've heard of the Federal Bureau of Investigations. That's, of course, famous, but not the County Bureau of Investigations. Mm-hmm. But there's an investigator, I imagine, who does that. And I'm certain that raising this issue with the DA, raising this issue with the city attorney, marching to their offices, demanding interviews with them, demanding that they deal with it, giving them written complaints and petitions.
Asking for a comment of some kind?
And, of course, asking for comments is a way of publicizing the issue that puts pressure on, certainly puts pressure on them not to try this shit again anytime soon.
But it also may actually have some other beneficial effects. If you reveal a corrupt process in the police department and the city council and the city staff, I don't think you're just going to stop with this one issue. There are going to be other issues that are going to come up here, too. And there have been over the years. Let's hear some more from the folks on the street. And then, of course, Uncle Dennis will be rolling in with From the Cream to the Dregs.
Well, it's the 22nd of January, Wednesday, I think. And I'm on the levee, heading towards the drum circle. It's a small drum circle, I would say 15 or 20 people at most. Only a third of those drummers. But we are handing out a flyer, gathering a food and a bomb, 4 p.m. Looks like it's been cut off. It's not the ideal flyer, but it is timely. It's about a march on Saturday against discrimination at Pergolesi and elsewhere.
And as I mentioned, that will be pursued this Saturday again between 4 and 5 at the steps of the post office, where Huff will be meeting, as well as any other group that wants to join in this research and investigation. Who knows? Maybe we can raise some issues around the corruption around the bicycle, bike-napping activities of the police department and the cover-up behavior of the city council. So, again, the main focus of Huff has usually been to the seizure of homeless property. I think that was the original subject at the last Huff meeting, which we did yesterday, that we're interested in doing is finding out who's had their property taken, maybe planning to have some kind of a march to the police station at some point when it's actually open.
Not free. Not simply property. The police are now taking people's dogs and stuff.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's another issue that's going to be addressed.
For the dog for a homeless person so they don't have the $300 to get it back out again.
And the dog gets killed.
$500 to get a dog out?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that I've gotten several reports of people who are, you know, actually panhandling so they can get their dog out of the
pound. We might do some benefits, you know, to get some of these dogs from being killed by the
Murdering. Murder.
Well, yeah.
It's not killing. It's murder of an innocent animal.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot of public support to stop the police from doing that kind of activity.
I'm going to be calling up the big
cheesers. But these homeless people are so abusive to their pets, it really is a kindness.
Oh, yeah, they're the sweetest things. They roll over.
Well,
they love tummy rubs.
Kill the pet. I mean, come on.
Well, yeah, that's the way to go. I mean,
they
might find a home before it gets killed. You never can tell.
Oh, unlikely. But that, if we did some benefits, I think we... Well, no.
But we'll be talking about this anyway on Saturday. So come on down and join us.
And give us your story.
We have an anonymous report here about, you were saying that social, the need to actually have an advocate at the homeless lack of services center is becoming acute.
I've been advocating for a fellow who's disabled, and he was out sleeping outside in the cold weather, and he developed internal bleeding, had to go to the hospital, he's in board and care now, and I've been walking him through, advocating for him, and going to doctor's appointments with him, and I'm just seeing more and more that the people working within the system really are showing a positive interest in pursuing their best interests.
They are or they aren't?
They are not. It's more like, how can I deal with this to get rid of it? And even as doctors, kind of like, well, you're as good as dead, you know, forget it, sort of thing. And just that general attitude is, what help is there really is very nominal and sketchy, and that we need to have more advocates to go there and witness to them and ask questions and
accompany people.
Yeah, to just see that they get served without being, you know, just shuffled around.
And you're going to keep a low profile and not say who you are, is that correct?
Oh, everybody knows me.
Very well. Thank you. Everybody knows you. We have a long update here from scarf a maker, seller, and a displayer, Kate W. Hey, Kate.
Hi there. Scarf lady.
Hey, scarf lady woman. So what's the update?
Okay, I'm going to try and make this short. I kind of got chased out of town by CSO Barnett. went down to Venice Beach to try and sell down there. After a lot of time and expense was told before I could sell very much at all, like two scarves was all I got to sell, that I couldn't sell down there either, and they would give me a ticket if I showed up the next day. So, and I missed the whole weekend when there would have been business too. So it was, everything's kind of been a train wreck this month. But anyway, so got really sick, tried to come back here, get my business license. I showed up Thursday evening, went down to City Hall Friday morning to get the business license, found that City Hall was closed Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and I just need to make some money to eat, and so I set up anyway, and CSO Barnett gets the pleasure of finally giving the threatened ticket that he had chased me out of town in the first place for
several hundred dollars.
I don't know what it is. I got to go to court now and deal with it. So I would have left town, but now I'm stuck here, got to deal with that rigmarole. So, and I had told him I was going on Tuesday to get a license, and he didn't care. He was just excited that he could finally get me. So, didn't sell for those days either. And then the days that I have been able to sell, see in a second, I have sold nothing. So it's a pretty bum month for me right now.
You've been here how many hours today?
Actually, I think I got down here at 1, so I it's not a long day for
3
me.
Hours.
I went down to apply for new Medi-Cal, so yeah, like actually almost, I guess, 4 hours now.
We're here for Surf Life, and you haven't sold anything.
No, I haven't sold anything today. I didn't sell anything yesterday. I didn't sell anything Friday, the day that I sold, and then the next day I got ticketed. So.
Well, I see you have your business license.
Yeah.
And your state tax permit or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's correct. And since business is so slow, I've lowered the price of my scarves from 20 to 18 because